I just have such a good time over here. It's like a little party all by myself. And then Howard tells me how to clap because I was trying to watch Bill, but there was a time lag. By the time I got my hands, he was already out. But Howard's right here, so I was able. And then you got Rick doing that little bass run like that. I'm like, how come I don't have him doing that when I'm preaching? That would be fun. That would be great. I'd actually like that a lot. All right, so I'm going to be dropping my mask while I'm preaching because, frankly, I have to. I just have to. So I'm letting you know that now. And because there is a lot of abuse, the very first thing I want to say about this passage is what Jesus says about this passage. This is what Jesus says about those who abuse us. Jesus says, pray for them. He does not say, stay with them. I am being serious. If you or you know of someone who is in an abusive relationship, they are not where God wants them to be, and they need to get out, or you need to get out now. All right? If you hear nothing else that I preach, please hear that. Because the church has a terrible history of trying to tell people to stay in abusive relationship. That is not God's will. That is not God's desire. And it is not your job to redeem that abuser. You pray for them. You leave them. You do not stay with them. So there's that sermon. Oy. All right. So, like everyone else, I lament the rage and the meanness I see in our COVID-weary culture. We're living in a world under stress, in a culture that is off the guardrails of civility and courtesy are all gone. We see it in our politicians who have totally lost the capacity of being honest or sincere. We see it on the news. We see it on airplanes. We see it on our highways. We see it in the stores. We see it in parking lots. We see people angry about vaccines. We see people angry about masks. We see people about, well, pretty much just about everything. It's like the primary emotion of the whole society is anger, 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 anger. We hear about supply chain issues and shortages. And as Christians, as disciples, it is past time for us to send a new message, because there is no supply chain issue when it comes to living by grace. Because God provides all the grace that we need. There is no shortage of grace. We've got plenty of grace. What we are in need of is more people living by that grace. And that is sorely lacking in our society. And that is why we need to share it. You've heard of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. That is in Matthew's Gospel. It's kind of famous, at least among Christians. This is Luke's less famous version, called the Sermon on the Plain. It actually starts all the way back in verse 17. Today we picked it up at verse 27. Now remember, these people listening to Jesus are burdened and oppressed under the harsh rule of the Roman authorities, and they're hypocritical lackeys. Okay. Just wanted to see if there was a connection. These people so badly wanted to see things change. They wanted to see justice. They wanted to see freedom. They wanted to see Rome fall and Israel lifted up, but they wanted redemption. But look at what they got. They got the same thing we're getting. Jesus being all Jesus-y, telling us to love our enemies. Oh, please. Have you met our enemies? We'll start loving them when they start loving us. We'll start welcoming them when they welcome us. We'll start accepting them when they accept us. I get it. Until they think like us, let's act like them. And Jesus, God bless him. Instead of being sympathetic, he challenges us. Love your enemies. Jesus reminds us that if we love those who vote like us or think like us or tweet like us, where's the grace in that? If we do good for those who agree with us, whose priorities mirror ours, whose convictions reflect our own, where's the grace in that? If we share with those who share our economic philosophy, our political views, and our work ethic, where's the grace in that? Anyone can love those who love in return. Anyone who can do good to those who do good in return. Anyone can share with those who share in return. But we are called to a different identity. We are called to an identity of grace. And there is an urgent call right now for us to be able to live that grace out by loving our enemies in this fractured season of humanity. Can there be a more clear need before us to do good to those who hate us in a world where we just as soon write them off and unfollow them or unfriend them? I mean, we hear this sermon and it sounds like, to be honest with you, it sounds like an impossible assignment. There is no way we can do what Jesus says to do in this sermon. And we are right. There is no way we can do it. We can't do it. There is no way we can do it on our strength, not on our willpower, not on our spiritual resources. We can only do this when we're connected with Jesus, when we are aligned with God, allowing God's Spirit to flow through us. And even if we succeed, that does not mean we're going to have some heavenly experience all gathered around a campfire, roasting marshmallows, singing kumbaya. Jesus did it and ended up on a cross. Jesus, the Son of God, capable of calling down 10,000 angels, totally overthrowing the evil empire, totally overthrowing the soldiers, totally getting rid of the corrupt, power-hungry priest, and instead, he dies for them. The same as he dies for us. He was faithful, but it was not easy. And at that moment on the cross, there was no assurance of victory. He died, and in some accounts, he died abandoned by his disciples, abandoned and deserted by people he thought were his friends. He died crying out to God, wondering why God had abandoned him. Jesus did not agree with the Romans. He loved the Romans. About 7 years ago, there was an article about an experiment in empathy. And it began by introducing us to Todd Underwood from Kansas City. He is the founder and the owner of a social marketplace for the firearms community, an organization called the United Gun Group. Now, that group and Todd as its founder had gained instant notoriety as the ones who had allowed George Zimmerman to sell on their portal the gun that Zimmerman had used to kill Trayvon Martin. Todd was traveling to New York, where he did not know it yet, but he would soon meet Carolyn Tuft, a self-employed artist and mother of four from Salt Lake City, who on February 12, 2007, had taken her 15-year-old and youngest daughter, Kirsten, to the Trolley Square Mall in Salt Lake City to buy Valentine's Day cards for her friends. when a shooter opened fire. Kirsten was killed right in front of her mom, right in front of Carolyn. And Carolyn was shot so many times that she continues to live with debilitating pain every moment of her day. This experiment was drawing these two unlikely folk together to New York, where a dozen other people from both sides of the gun debate would meet and hear deeply each other's stories. Each of the invitees had had a personal experience with guns, which had shaped forever their lives and their opinions about guns. Some of them were victims of assault who were both bound and liberated by a gun at the scene. There were others who were card-carrying members of the NRA, veterans and police officers, several who had lost children in mass shootings and accidental ones, a wide range of folks who had all agreed to come to New York and to participate in this experiment of radical empathy. Todd and Carolyn met, and they were paired up first to hear each other's story. Todd was a staunch supporter for liberal gun laws, dismissed gun control advocates as completely irrational. Carolyn described her tireless efforts of working for stricter gun laws so that those who should never have guns in the first place couldn't get them. And they, like all the other pairs around them, would find that that first day was tough. And they ended up going back to their hotel rooms completely spent from the emotional complexity of the day. And day two was even more challenging. The participants were paired up as they had been the day before, but this time they had to tell each other their personal story behind their stance, why they felt the way that they did. What were the incidents that had happened in their lives to create such a defined opinion about guns? And then each pair had to tell the larger group the same story, but from the other person's point of view. What was the other person's story? Carolyn was the first one to stand up, and as a reporter says, it was the most gripping 13 minutes she had ever seen. Carolyn said, "I'm Todd Underwood, founder of United Gun Group, which is the company that sold the gun that shot Trayvon Martin." And there was a brief waiver, then it passed. And she began to describe Todd's abusive, manipulative father. Had spent Todd's entire childhood and young adulthood beating him and kicking him on a daily basis. Todd had muscular dystrophy, which made him unsteady on his feet, and his father took every advantage he could. When Todd was a young teenager, his father punched him so hard in the face, it broke his nose. And Todd said, "At that moment, I decided no one would ever bully me again." So now guns help Todd to feel safe. They comfort him as he desires to protect his family. And Carolyn concluded, "My name is Todd." Then it was Todd's turn. Todd took a deep breath, looked down at his notes, and began, "My name is Carolyn. I am an artist. I was self-employed. I had my own company. What I was most proud of in my life was," and his voice cracked, and suddenly he could not go on. For a full, painful minute, the folks in the room waited quietly for Todd to regain his composure. Carolyn would stand beside him and put her arm on his shoulder. Todd then told of Carolyn's pride as the mother of two boys and two girls, of the love that filled their home, of Kirsten, who was the bright light of her life. The story turned as he portrayed that fateful day in the mall. The loud bangs, the shattered glass, the shooter she stared down, the bullets raining down upon herself, the bullets that ended the daughter, her precious daughter's life. And the tears on Todd's face as he was telling Carolyn's story bore the anguish of that memory. I complained to my daughter about her messy room at times, Todd said, speaking as Carolyn. I would give anything to be able to have that messy room again. My name is Carolyn. Now, like I said, the reporter said nothing that else happened that weekend matched those 13 minutes when Carolyn Tuft and Todd Underwood took possession of one another's stories. They became each other. And in that moment, the videographers were crying. The organizers who had heard many, many stories were crying. Everybody in the place was filled with tears. No one could forget what they saw or heard. And in that moment, the universality of human vulnerability had been so obvious and so breathtaking that everyone in the room was separated not by a deep canyon, but by a very thin line. We are living in a time when our world, our country, our communities, and our society are being ripped apart by our differences, by fear and anger and hatred. But what if, instead of letting that divide grow wider and deeper, we called that line that separates us a string, a weave that weaves us together? Though Todd and Carolyn were on separate sides, they shared a common thread, a thread of pain. Sharing their pain did not bring agreement. It brought about something even more important. It brought about connection, a connection that allows us to see the full dignity in those who are different, with different views, a connection that rises above fear and distrust. Jesus came to show us that the common thread that we share with others is the thread of grace. And as followers of Jesus, as citizens of God's kingdom, Jesus reminds us that we are called to be weavers who take that thread of grace and weave it into our society, weave it into a world that has been deeply divided by fear and hate, and we weave it together with God's love and with God's grace. And if we're going to do that, then we're going to have to reach out to the other side. When agreement fails, there is empathy to take on their story as ours. When empathy fails, there is honesty about who we are and whose we are. When honesty fails, there is hope that allows us to see beyond that current moment. And if hope should fail, there is love and grace. A love that does not come with terms and conditions. A love that never fails. And a grace that never ends. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached, "Returning hate for hate multiplies hate, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Amen.